Hello and welcome to the Girl Fuel Podcast. My name is Haley. I'm a registered dietitian and nutrition coach here to help you along your health and fitness journey by providing evidence and experience-based knowledge and full transparency. We have a lot to chat about today, so let's dive on in. Today, I am joined by my colleague and friend, Kara Goss, who is also a registered dietitian and business owner. So, Kara, I'd love for you to just tell us more about you. Where are you from? What do you do? Tell us all the things.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. I love that I got like double Haley time yesterday and today because Haley was on my podcast yesterday. Now I get to be on hers. So fun. So I am, as Haley said, Kara Goss. I am a registered dietitian, certified personal trainer, online health and fitness coach. I have probably about like 3+ years of functional health training, which I know that is something that Haley and I can bond over, just all of the holistic and functional health things. I am from the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area. So shout out to all my Yinzers if anyone's listening from Pittsburgh area. And yeah, I have been on my own health and fitness journey for a very, very long time. I mean, I started very early on. I always say that kind of like that canon event in my health and fitness journey was a very close family member telling me that I was fat at age 13. And that really spiraled me into, you know, fad diets and years upon years of trying to lose the weight in all of the wrong ways and thinking that health was something that it wasn't. So I've been through it all, you know, kind of an abridged version of who I am. I've been the girl who has struggled to lose weight. I've been the girl who's been overweight, who was scared to get in the gym. I've been the girl who struggled with disordered eating habits and binge eating. I have a very long, you know, post-birth control journey that we're going to get into today. So I've struggled with hormone health. I basically struggled with every single aspect of my health under the sun. I think the only part that I have a struggle with, which we kind of talked about yesterday, was gut health, which knock on wood. But you know, there's a lot that I have been through, and that really pushed me into where I'm at today with coaching online and building my own business, the Functional Fat Loss Academy. I have been in business now for almost 5 years, been an RD for almost 5 years, so which feels crazy. I feel like it just started yesterday. Like I still feel so young into this space, you know? But yeah, I'm really, really passionate about helping women. I focus on all things women's health, hormones, gut health, fat loss within my practice. And I have an incredible team of nutritionists and dietitians beside me who also help me. So yeah, I'm just really, really blessed to do what I do. I genuinely wake up every single day, like so excited to call this my quote unquote job. And it's just been a crazy journey in my own sense. And I think with me having gone through everything that I've gone through, it just helps me to empathize so much more with the people that I work with. You know, like it's a lot easier to work with somebody whenever they get what you're feeling, you know? So yeah, that's a little bit about who I am.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree more. As much as, you know, it sucks going through some of the things that we've been through with relationship with food, hormone, gut, all of that, it definitely helps put it in perspective when we do get clients that are also, you know, in a similar boat. And Kara is a real wealth of knowledge. So I'll make sure that, you know, we get you guys connected with her on social media. But as she kind of already alluded to, today we are going to talk about coming off birth control, losing your period or hypothalamic amenorrhea, and kind of everything that comes along with it. Because I feel like birth control, especially, you know, in the Western medicine community, is a little bit of a taboo topic. It's something that is often used as a band-aid, a solution, not only to prevent pregnancy, which we all, you know, appreciate it for, but it is slapped on a lot of hormonal symptoms as, hey, this is your solution for now. And, you know, we have learned over the years that that is not the case. So
absolutely.
Sarah, I would love for you to dive in and talk about what is amenorrhea, specifically what is hypothalamic amenorrhea?
It's so funny because I was actually just talking to a client about hypothalamic amenorrhea the other day. And she was like, what did you just say to me? It sounds like such a big word. And when you really break it down, obviously it's, you can find the meaning in the wording of it, right? So we're obviously dealing with some sort of loss of our menstrual cycle. So pertaining to amenorrhea, and then hypothalamic, that's really talking about our hypothalamus and just kind of like that overall HPA access and that brain connection to between like our brain and our ovaries and basically all of the other hormones in our body that are regulating the menstrual cycle. So basically hypothalamic amenorrhea is more so defined as a lack of a menstrual period for 6 months or longer without any sort of medical diagnosis. So a lot of times with this, we will be rolling out other conditions like PCOS or even like post-birth control syndrome or high prolactin, hypothyroidism, different things of that sort. So basically like your hypothalamus is pretty much that master hormonal commander of your body. It regulates so many different things. It regulates sleep, hunger, a lot of different variables of reproduction. And its main function is pretty much to keep your body in a state of homeostasis, right? It also releases GnRH, which is a hormone that works with other sex hormones and reproductive hormones like LH, FSH, estrogen to regulate your menstrual cycle. So, you know, whenever we are seeing this hypothalamic amenorrhea, it's basically your body is saying, hey, we want to keep you safe. And producing a period is a really hormonally and energetically expensive process. And right now, we think that your body is in a state of stress or something is kind of off. So we're not going to give you a period. And this can also happen. Like, obviously, we look at even through pregnancy, I kind of use this as an example. Like, why do we not get a period through pregnancy, right? It's because our body is under a lot of stress. We have something else that we are focusing on, right? So hypothalamic amenorrhea is a type of secondary amenorrhea, whereas primary amenorrhea would basically refer to if you haven't gotten your first period by age 16 or within like 5 years of puberty, which I personally do not see a lot. If anything, I think that girls are getting their period much further and further like ahead than behind these days, like at a much younger age. I'll never forget talking to my cousin who told me she got her first period at like 8 years old. And I was like,
oh my God,
what? Absolutely insane. But that secondary amenorrhea is basically just when we have had regular periods, but then we stop getting that period for normally, I would say like, I definitely see different definitions. Like I've seen some people say more than 3 months. I've seen some people say more than six. But I would say in that 3 to 6 month mark is normally where we're looking at for sure.
I agree. And that's along the lines of how I define it too. And you might be wondering, well, you know, why does that happen? Mm-hmm. And Kara mentioned, you know, the connection between all the way up in the hypothalamus and how regulatory that really is. So we have to remember that, like Kara mentioned, not only is our period a very demanding process on our body, but it also, to our body, it's not always necessary. Because if your body is not in a state where it feels safe enough for you to get pregnant, for you to be fertile, it's like, we can turn this off. We do not need this right now. You are in no state to conceive. Yep. And that's too where, you know, let's talk about why hypothalamic amenorrhea happens. And then we can tap into like post-birth control syndrome as well.
Absolutely. So with hypothalamic amenorrhea, a lot of the big reasons why are going to be stressors on the body. And I truly don't think until you go through something like this, and I have a few different experiences of dealing with hypothalamic amenorrhea. I've gotten it from diet induced and I've gotten it from post-birth control induced. So a lot of times we're going to see that maybe we are not eating enough. We are underfueling. We're not getting in enough calories, enough nutrients. We are maybe doing too much exercise. I will say that more than anything, I usually see the excessive exercise side of things paired with underfueling as well. You know, like a lot of people probably, there are more than not people out there who probably need to get a bit more exercise in. But then we also do have those very type A personalities where it's like, I'm doing intense cardio for an hour every single day and I'm only eating 1,000 calories a day, you know? So often that's paired with low calorie intake. Low body fat percentage is going to be another really big one. So for like my competitors, bodybuilders out there, whatever it may be, a lot of times, like when we're deep in that dieting prep and You also don't have to be a bodybuilder for this to happen, because it also happened to me as a pure lifestyle client. But low body fat percentage, this can absolutely create that lack of period. And then also just overall stressors like emotional, psychological, environmental, all of those different things that kind of play a role into how you are perceiving and reacting to stress as well. So it really is more of a stress issue than anything. And I truly don't think that people believe me until they see it actually happen, whether either in themselves or with somebody else, you know?
Definitely. And I know that, you know, working with clients that do have hypothalamic amenorrhea, it's very hard, because I think a big part of it, and I'm sure we've both been there, is the mental aspect, is letting yourself eat more food, letting yourself bring down your exercise for a lot of people, and maybe even accepting that you're going to have to gain a little bit of weight in order to be the healthiest version of yourself, rather than focusing on being the leanest version of yourself. And we're going to go into, you know, things to essentially check off your list before thinking about coming off of your birth control. But I would say, you know, a healthy body weight is definitely one of them.
Huge. That is going to be so big. And I mean, I also think too, this goes both ways, because I think that this is where things can get a little bit sticky as well, is that I would say for probably 80 to 85% of the clients that I work with, they are probably going to have to gain a little bit of weight when coming off of hormonal birth control, because we do need to make sure that we are consuming enough, and that at times does come with a bit of weight gain. But then we can also see that at times there is a lot of stress on the body from potentially being too overweight or having too much body fat on us, right? So there are those times where we may actually need to lose a bit of body fat as well, but still, that's a delicate balance too, because we can't be like doing this really harsh diet or anything of that sort. So I would say that those types of cases are a little bit more difficult to work with as well, because it's like you're finding that balance of, okay, we probably do need to get some of this excess body fat off, but also we need to make sure that we're fueling our bodies properly. But I would say that, you know, probably the majority of the time it's that mental struggle of, okay, I don't want to gain any more weight, but I might have to see the scale fluctuate up a little bit to get my period back and get my body into a better place.
Definitely. And it's not in all cases. You know, I've had plenty of girls where we did the right prep work, which we'll talk about, and they came off their birth control rather seamlessly. However, post-birth control syndrome is a real thing. So that's where, you know, if you are on something and you're considering coming off, we're going to want to make sure that we cover all of our bases, because what post-birth control syndrome may look like, and I'm lucky that I did not experience this when I came off birth control. I did not get my period back for a while, but other than that, I didn't have any symptoms outside of some anxiety, but, you know, some symptoms of that are probably going to be, you know, anxiety, insomnia is a common one for people, just weight fluctuations or feeling a little bit out of control with your weight. Some people will just gain weight from coming off when other systems aren't supported, because we know that birth control impacts everything. It impacts our thyroid. It impacts all of our sex hormones. It impacts our cortisol to a degree. What are some other symptoms that you usually see with post-birth control syndrome?
So I will, speaking from experience in my own journey, so obviously like loss of menstrual cycle. So, and those irregular menstrual cycles, right? So, you know, for me, the very first time, like whenever I came off of hormonal birth control and I was working to get my period back, I lost my period for 10 months. Like, and I will say that I had like one to two really like scanty periods in between there, but I did not actually get that cycle back until a full 10 months in. We can also see other issues. Obviously, like estrogen dominance is a really, really big one, especially because whenever we are on the birth control pill, this notoriously suppresses progesterone levels. So we can either see actual like clinically elevated estrogen, where we are actually seeing like frank estrogen dominance, or we might be seeing relative estrogen dominance, where that estrogen is, you know, it might even be like a bit normal, but in relation to progesterone, it's really high and it's kind of throwing off that imbalance. So that can also lead to, you know, bloating, acne, brain fog. Again, like you said, like the difficulties with weight gain is going to be huge. And I would also say insomnia too. I struggled Oh, there was like a 4 month period where I literally was not sleeping, and it was at the peak of my weight gain post birth control, and I was also not sleeping. And I was like, this is the worst time of my life. Like I want to die, honestly. I was not in a good place mentally. And so yeah, that was another really, really big issue that I had dealt with. But I also just think too, with post birth control syndrome, one of the sticky things that can happen here, and sometimes what I will see in some clients, is sometimes women will get their period back right away. They'll get like one or two periods and they're like, oh my gosh, cool, I'm in the clear. And then like 3, 4 month mark, it disappears on us. So that's why we as coaches normally have some sort of guideline or set in stone rule of like, hey, we want to see X amount of normal periods before we can start, focusing on fat loss again or body weight loss or whatever it may be, because it can be a little bit tricky and things can definitely kind of trick you a little bit whenever you come off of birth control. There's a lot of different systems that can be imbalanced if you're not supporting them properly. But even when you are supporting them properly, sometimes things just do not go the way that you think that they're going to, which is another really frustrating part of it.
It is. And I feel like something I've seen a lot lately, both in closer friends and clients and just people that I've talked to online, is, being on birth control for 10, 15 years. And that's how I was. I was on it for, I think, 10 or 11 years. I took myself off of it just very willy-nilly a couple times, and it made everything worse. And I ended up going back on it. But what I see is, they don't get their cycle back. And then when they do, it's just as bad as it was before they went on. Because remember, we know a lot of people, and I'm curious for those of you who are listening, who here, hypothetically, raise your hands, pretend you're all here with us, who went on birth control because they were having horrible symptoms, right? Painful periods, cramping and pain that made you throw up and want to stay in bed. Maybe I've seen people go on it because they're suspected to have PCOS or endometriosis. And for some people are really lucky and they go on birth control, they do all the right things, they take care of their body just normally, and they come off and they're fine.
What's
However,
it like to be God's favorite?
right? Oh my God. However, I do see it a lot where the first like 3 to 6 months off the pill, maybe even sometimes the first year, because they do say that it can take a full year for your cycle to regulate after birth control. And I would honestly say longer than that, depending on when within that year you got your first bleed and how it continued from there. But if you are someone that, was or are on birth control to help with symptoms, be very aware that those might come back. And I'm not saying that to be negative, because even if they do come back, there's something that we can do about it. There is always almost.
Yes. And I think that's the thing, and it makes me so sad, but that is the thing that so many women are uneducated on, is the fact that there was a root cause to these symptoms in the first place. And now that we've kind of band-aided them and masked them with birth control, we probably haven't been fixing that root cause or even digging into it, because maybe birth control did improve those symptoms. But inevitably, eventually, I mean, maybe you're somebody who stays on birth control for the long term, but if you are somebody who does want to come off, or you desire to have children, whatever it may be, those are things that you're going to have to fix whenever you come off of it, So I think that's where people get frustrated, because they're like, well, birth control fixed all of my issues. Didn't necessarily fix the root cause, just kind of, placated the symptoms.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I have girls that are still on birth control. I don't know about you, Tara, but I never will push my client to come off of it unless it is taking away from their life or they want to get pregnant. Because I do have a lot of clients that come to me and they're like, I'm on this. I know you can help. I do want to get pregnant, but I'm very scared to come off. So, Tara, I would love for you to just tell us, a little bit more about your story and, maybe what you did and to come off your birth control, and maybe what you wish you had known before or done differently.
So my story is, it's so funny because I had actually just started like diving really, really deep into the functional health space probably a few months before I decided to come off of my hormonal birth control. I was working with a previous coach at the time who I had been with for like 4 years at that time. And we were just finishing up a dieting phase. And there were kind of like a lot of nuances around like that relationship toward the end of our coaching relationship either way, but I will say that I was like pretty low calorie in that dieting phase. And then we never really got my calories back up to a solid place. So I did everything that you should not do before coming off of birth control because I was already in a very metabolically adapted state. My body was already in a pretty stressed state. And then I decided to come off of hormonal birth control, which was just a total, just like crap storm, right? And so basically, as I came off of hormonal birth control, there were things that I was doing to support my body that I know now, like, I know so much more of what I should have been doing, but I did end up getting lab work probably like 3 months after coming off because I had not, gotten my period or anything of that sort. My liver enzymes, like they were in the 70s and 80s.
Wow.
So high. Liver, it was nuts. I was like, what is going on here? I was freaking out because I was like, because again, I was still like learning a lot more about these things. Progesterone was absolutely tanked. I am somebody who notoriously, my progesterone has never been higher than a 1.3, and it typically functions around the like 0.5 to 1 mark. Like,
Interesting.
and no matter what I do, Haley, like it has been a 3-year journey of trying to get my progesterone up. And again, like I really like to just be fully transparent about this because I am a walking testament to, you can do all of the right things to regulate things, and sometimes things just still want to fight you back, and sometimes things still just want to stick, So progesterone was tanked, testosterone was pretty tanked. Liver needed a lot of support. So there were some things that we started adding in, but I'll be honest with you, like it was really like I had left that coach and then transitioned to my now coach, Austin, who that's when things really started to like take a shift and turn and everything of that sort. But I did end up getting my period back like 10 months in. But that was just the start of things regulating. And then at that same time, we were starting to increase calories and everything of that sort. So by the time I got my period back, I had already gained like 15 pounds. And then I ended up gaining another 15 through increasing calories, all of that. I was definitely eating in like a caloric surplus at a certain time. So by the time I, got my period back regular, everything of that sort, I had gained 30 pounds. And I went through some periods of really low cortisol. I was insanely stressed out. Like that was probably one of the most stressful years in business for me. So again, we probably saw like that, that hypothalamic response there, a lot of that stress keeping that progesterone low. So, but I will be honest with you, the main symptoms that I personally saw for myself were obviously like the weight gain, which again, that was coupled with eating more overall. Low progesterone, so like some headaches from that. And then that period, that stint of insomnia where I was dealing with also really low cortisol. But like outside of that, I felt great. So I was just really frustrated that I was like, come on, like, what is my period doing? You know what I mean? Like, what's my body doing? But I will say that as I had continued to gain some of that weight, that did make me a bit more estrogen dominant. So I was dealing with some more of that puffiness, bloating, all of that kind of stuff. But, some of the things that I did start doing and that I now, know to start doing and that I help walk my clients through as well is obviously there are a lot of different areas that we need to support in terms of coming off of, hormonal birth control. And I normally like to touch on like five main areas. So, one of the very first ones is like diet quality and calorie quantity. Our second is our movement and exercise level and what does that look like? Third is stress and sleep and stress management. Four is blood sugar, and then five is liver and gut health support. Liver support, so important whenever we're coming off of hormonal birth control, because we really want to make sure that, those detox pathways are opened, that we are able to metabolize, all of these hormones properly. So I don't know if you want me to kind of like dive into each of those, or what do you think?
No, definitely. Let's dive into those. One other I definitely
Awesome.
want to touch on is thyroid, because we know that
Yes.
some birth controls, especially the pills, will impact your thyroid hormones, cause some
Absolutely.
downregulation. And especially where I feel like, we both were, and a lot of our clients are coming to us in that state of very low calorie or with a history of some disordered even eating behavior where they spent a good portion of their adult life, unfortunately. A lot of women are in this boat. dieting. Yep. And then what that does on its own is, you know, decrease our thyroid hormone production, which is directly responsible for our metabolic rate. In addition yes. to that, most birth controls will deplete essential vitamins and minerals that are involved in, well, everything, but especially thyroid yep. hormone regulation, adrenal hormone regulation. So let's definitely dive into those. And then I have a little bit of a blood work case study that I'll share with some.
Ooh, amazing.
Yeah.
Love that. Love that. Yeah. Thank you for pointing that out, because that's so, so huge in that thyroid aspect of things and all of those nutrients that we do need, the selenium, zinc, B vitamins, all of that kind of stuff. So, so important. So yeah, I mean, I kind of have like a little checklist of things that, and here's the thing is like, all of these items are really items that we should be focusing on no matter what, right? Like these are things that we can be doing to support our body before and while coming off of birth control. But ultimately, these are things that can support all areas of our health and our hormones overall, right? But so, you know, with diet quality, calorie quantity, obviously, you know, this is a no-brainer. We want to make sure that we are eating enough. We want to ensure that we are eating around maintenance, that we're focusing on, you know, a wide variety of nutrients, that we're getting in a lot of colors. We're eating the rainbow. We're getting in different polyphenols and fibers. And we're really making sure that we are balancing each of our meals with a source of carb, fat, protein, fiber. I really try to kind of like, you know, take a flexible approach with my clients, obviously, because I want to make sure that they're never feeling too restricted by any means. But I really do try to take more of like a Mediterranean style approach with them, really limiting those added sugars, processed foods, and really focusing more in on like, again, our colorful fruits and veggies. Something that I really like to have my clients do is aiming for at least 3 different colors of veggies each day and 2 different colors of fruits, which I know sounds really elementary, but it is hard for people to do. Like 3 cups of 3 different color veggies per day, like that's hard for a lot of the average population to do. And again, of course, like we have to take into consideration gut health. Are we cooking these things? All of these kinds of things, right? But making sure that we are not dealing with any nutrient deficiencies, like Haley just said, like, are we getting in enough of those really important nutrients? And are we supporting things like B vitamins, vitamin D, A, C, selenium, iron, magnesium, and also omega-3s? So really, really putting a large emphasis on healthy fats, definitely with my hormone health girls and post-birth control girls, we're going to be really putting a large emphasis on those healthy fats and probably increasing that fat intake a bit, because we do know that fats are so, so crucial for that steroid hormone production and overall endocrine health as well. But also carbohydrates are so, so important too, right? We shouldn't be fearing carbs. We have to make sure that we are getting enough carbs in the diet as well. They also help to calm cortisol levels. So that's going to help with overall stress and regulating that cycle. And of course, getting enough protein in the diet too is so, so important. Normally, like obviously on average, I'm looking at anywhere from like at least 25 to 30 grams of protein per meal, depending on the person. But, you know, really just making sure that we are focusing on diet quality, calorie quantity is going to be huge. Obviously, our movement and our exercise level too. So what does movement look like? Do we need to pull back on movement or intensity or anything of that sort at all to help us regulate things a little bit more? Because we do know that obviously, yes, exercise is an acute stress on the body, but it also depends on like, what does the rest of our lifestyle and our stress look like, right? And I'm a firm believer that I really do, unless we are dealing with a really extreme case, I really do like for my clients to still train, because I think that completely pulling out training, especially while you're having somebody eat more and they're already stressed about that, can be a really stressful thing. So maybe what we do is maybe we just move back from training 4 days a week to 3 days a week, or maybe we move back from training to failure to training with like 2 to 3 reps in reserve, right? What kind of cardio are we doing? We really should be probably mainly more so focusing on that low to moderate intensity. Walking is great. Go for a walk. Doesn't have to be a HIIT session or whatever it may be. But again, this is going to be so dependent person to person, you know, because it really is going to depend on what their overall lifestyle looks like and what their current training routine is. But, you know, just really making sure that we are focusing on at least some sort of movement and making sure that it's movement that feels good for us is really important. I think that right now there's a big emphasis on like gentle movement and only doing like yoga and Pilates and everything of that sort, which we know that we can absolutely strength train. Like we are, women are built to strength train. Like we are strong, we can handle intensity. But again, it's important to balance it with the other stresses of your life for sure. So what were you going to say?
No, I love how you outlined the priorities as far as, you know, diet quality and exercise goes, because there are two ends of the spectrum, you know, like we mentioned with weight pre going off birth control, there's two ends of the spectrum when it comes to exercise, right? There are definitely people that could benefit from moving a little bit more, and there are people that could benefit from moving a little bit less. And that's where for a lot of people, it's knowing yourself, being willing to call yourself out, or hiring someone that can help you. But I also will very, very rarely completely pull exercise out unless that person is really dealing with like something like adrenal insufficiency as well. Like when I was going through my adrenal stuff, my hormones were oddly normal at that time for periods and stuff like that. But
That is crazy.
Well, I had spent years, you know, fixing that. I would say my periods were worse. Like we were talking before we hopped on about like the differences that we feel in our energy, in our anxiety, in our bowel movements, even between our follicular and our luteal phase. And my luteal phases were so much worse when my gut was bad, when my adrenals, my cortisol was low. But during that time, I did take like 4 to 6 months almost completely off from exercise. And there were definitely pros and cons thinking back on it now of doing that. But when it comes to period recovery, unless somebody is really that fatigued, I will not pull strength training. I will reduce volume.
Yes.
Just like you mentioned, whether it's dropping from 4 days to three, reducing the amount of exercises and sets that you're doing, and even just changing the focus can be helpful. Because I think for a lot of us, especially those of us that, you know, even if we're not competitors, we grew up in that space to a degree. We do like focusing on our physique when we go to the gym. Like that's part of why we lift. So taking the focus away from that a little bit can be helpful, and focusing more on, instead of, you know, getting as strong as possible or doing as many reps, being like, well, what is the quality of your exercise? Are you feeling it where you should be feeling it? Are you contracting as hard as you could? Are you moving in the right way? So that way, once we do remove those breaks, once we do get your period back and you're able to go balls to the walls in the gym again, you can do it even better. And that's something that I focused on a lot in my quote unquote health phase, was the quality of my training. So it doesn't mean that you have to stop what you're doing completely. And it doesn't mean that it has to suck either. It's just going to be something new, a new kind of challenge, so to speak.
Absolutely. I will say that there was a period during my post-birth control journey where I did take 1 whole month off of training as well. And again, it was me listening to my body. I just wasn't recovering well at all. Like I wasn't getting stronger. I wasn't recovering well. And I knew that I did get back into the gym afterward. I felt so refreshed. I was so happy that I had done that for myself, you know? So it is so dependent for sure. And of course, stress and sleep, which I am sure that you have talked on your podcast endlessly about these things, right? Every single episode. So we don't have to dive too deep into those things. But again, like I do just want to put an emphasis on how much these items are going to impact, you know, getting your period back and regulating things and improving symptoms post-birth control, because stress was definitely the number one issue for me with getting my period back and with my progesterone levels being so low and all of my sex hormones being so low. And this doesn't just have to do with like mental stress. It has to do with our total allostatic load. Like what are stressors in our environment, right? Like what is blue light exposure? What is our time management? What are our relationships and boundaries? Like all of these different things play a role. So I think that that's just so important to touch on. And like, I know that we harp about it all the time, but it's so key. It's so key. So that's huge. Blood sugar management, which this is going to go right along with kind of all of those habits that I talked about with our diets, you know, really just making sure that we're balancing things. We're not eating naked carbohydrates. We're pairing carbs with the source of protein and fiber and fat. Blood sugar balance is literally the basis of balanced hormones. Like I always say, you can't balance hormones without balancing blood sugar. Making sure that we are getting at least like 10 to 14 grams of fiber per 1,000 calories consumed is really important. You know, and a lot of times like we can see that imbalanced blood sugar is then going to impact things like cortisol, obviously insulin resistance, inflammation. So again, it's just kind of like that downstream negative trickle effect that we don't really want happening, you know? So blood sugar is going to be huge. And then liver and gut health, like this is going to be, I would say that this is probably one of those more like specific areas for, obviously we always want to be supporting this, but especially for birth control and post-birth control. So liver for sure, like something that I will do is start adding in some liver support right up front. I really love doing something like a NAC, milk thistle, Tudka. Those are great. And also focusing on liver supportive foods. So think things like your dark leafy greens, like kale, arugula, dark berries, like raspberries, blueberries, beets, cruciferous veggies, like your broccoli, cauliflower, and also spices. So like ginger, turmeric, garlic, all of those anti-inflammatory spices are really going to be great for overall liver health. Decreasing your alcohol is going to be very, very important, especially whenever we're post-birth control, because that is going to have a really big impact on how your liver is processing everything and metabolizing things. So, you know, if you are somebody who is consuming weekly alcohol, even if it is just 1 to 2 drinks per week, that is still going to have an impact on things. So even if you can try, like, you know, if you're somebody who drinks weekly alcohol, like challenge yourself, can I have 1 week per month where I don't have any alcohol at all? And eventually just kind of like moving that back so that you can just kind of be picky and choosy about when you're having that alcohol, I think is going to be huge. Also really supporting like overall just like drainage, like you can do like dry brushing, lymphatic massages, going to a sauna and sweating. Great to support liver detox. And of course, whenever it comes to the gut, you know, we know that birth control can alter the gut microbiome. So we may see that we're dealing with some underlying GI health issues, maybe low commensal bacteria, gut health infections, overgrowth, whatever it may be. So if you are somebody who is dealing with these GI health issues, of course, there are a lot of steps that we can take first. Like we want to make sure that we're pinpointing any, you know, trigger foods. We want to make sure that we are supporting things from a parasympathetic state when we're eating, paying attention to how we are eating, but it may warrant at some point digging further, getting a GI map and addressing those underlying issues as well. So yeah, I would say that those are like the really, really big areas. And, you know, also in terms of like specific supplementation too, like I definitely have some foundational supplements that I really like for birth control, post-birth control. I really love like NAC for liver support. And a lot of those foundational supplements that we'll have in the diet either way. So something like a fish oil, like an omega-3, magnesium, a lot of times a quality multivitamin can be really great, especially if we have some of those nutrients that have been depleted. Vitamin D can be really helpful as well. And then it'll just really depend on, you know, where our sex hormones at. Like, are we dealing with really low progesterone? Are we dealing with estrogen dominance? We could definitely get in some specific supplements there, like utilizing like a chasteberry or a progon B, or you have to get really specific with kind of like the estrogenic pathways when you're adding in DIM or something of that sort. But again, those are things that really, really have to kind of be assessed and considered among, okay, where are hormones at? Where's LH and FSH at? All of those different kinds of things. So those are things that I definitely would not add in blindly. I would always work with somebody whenever you're adding those sorts of things in.
That was all really, really helpful. And if you weren't taking notes, you might want to rewind a little bit and jot a few things down. But just the overarching theme here is just supporting all systems. Supporting all systems and reducing stress internally and externally, right?
Yep.
And, you know, thinking about client cases that I've had who, you know, they've come off birth control and then came to coaching, you know, gone to their doctors and maybe even been recommended to go back on to normalize their cycle. A couple of commonalities that I've seen between cases over the years would be issues with cortisol. So yep. A main reason that you may not get your cycle back after kind of being off birth control and reaching that point where you are experiencing that hypothalamic amenorrhea, cortisol may be elevated. And that's where, you know, getting a serum cortisol drawn in the morning or doing a whole Dutch test could be super helpful. I personally will recommend that my girls wait at least 3, if not 6 months to get sex hormones ran.
Yep.
Just because.
Agreed.
When you're on birth control, more so like hormonal method, so shots, pills, patches, we're basically just going to be able to assume that basically everything is a big fat zero, right? And I want to just put this out there that having your progesterone at like a 0.1, 0.2 is not normal. And no. I say that because it's like, unfortunately, 90% of the clients that come to me with hormonal symptoms, that is the case. And when they're having PMS, when they're having all of these horrible symptoms, nothing is done. So I really like the Chase Tree Berry or Vitex for that support. But in addition to that, we need to support our stress because cortisol, it steals progesterone, right? They share a precursor. And if you're not managing your cortisol, you're not going to be able to produce progesterone. So a couple of cases I've had recently, some have gotten their periods back, others were still working on it. You know, their serum cortisol levels were significantly elevated. Thyroid hormones, again, might be on the lower side and need a little bit of support there. B vitamin deficiencies are another one that are common. We'll see that in the CBC with elevated, you know, mean corpus volume, hemoglobin and hematocrit being a little bit off. Iron deficiency, I feel like I don't see as often with my birth control girls because they're not really bleeding to lose iron, so to speak.
Right. I agree with that.
Vitamin D is another one, but I will say that high cortisol is the biggest thing preventing you from getting that cycle back after coming off of it. Would you
agree? For sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's where it can be really helpful. And of course, like, you know, it can be really helpful to just kind of get a full hormone panel and get cortisol tested in with that. But if, you know, if you suspect like, you're really looking to see like the full picture, obviously a 4-point like urine saliva is going to be one of your best bets there. But I personally really love the comprehensive weight loss panel from Life Extension because it gives us so much of what we need. And I'll also normally add on LH, FSH, and SHBG to that just to kind of like give me a more well-rounded picture. But I would definitely agree it's like that the cortisol and adrenal health, and this is why we hark on stress management so much because it does play such a big role.
And just to kind of put that into perspective, when we talk about stress management, and I was one of these people where I was chronically stressed for years, but I didn't resonate as someone that was stressed. I never really thought that I was stressed, right? We were able to do all the things that we wanted to do in the day. Similar to yours, I know you mentioned you didn't sleep for a good 4 months. That was my life for a good 4 years. So
my God.
I don't know why I didn't put that together thinking like, okay, obviously I'm stressed. Like I can't get more than 4 hours of sleep per night.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, cortisol at the time was very, very high. And this was like almost 10 years ago that started for me in my undergrad, and it continued for a couple years after that until I really learned what the issue was. But when our cortisol is that high, everything downstream is impacted. So some kind of signs and symptoms that you are in like a fight or flight or chronic stress state outside of feeling literal stress and anxiety. And if you're someone that like, you don't know if you have anxiety or not, I think we can both share what it feels like. The main thing for me is like a tightness in my chest. So there will be times where my mind isn't anxious at all. It's just like, oh yeah, we're just doing our thing. But then my chest is like an elephant is sitting on it. And that's something that I had for years and years and years before I was even diagnosed with having anxiety. So that was like the biggest one. Just feeling
absolutely.
Like my body was alert all the time. Like I couldn't sit still. I couldn't rest. And that's the common thing in our clients too, with those type A individuals who do always feel the need to be productive. So that is one thing that if you are always feeling the need to be productive, especially as a woman, we might want to take a step back and unpack that.
Yes, absolutely. I will say for me, tightness in my chest. The other thing is just my heart rate. Like I am so much more aware of my heart rate. And then I also think it kind of gives me this negative feedback loop thing where I'm so aware of it that it's rising. And then it's like continuing that awareness is causing it to rise more. So that would be a really big thing for me for sure with the anxiety piece of it. Also, something else that I do want to touch on here is that what's really interesting is every single person has a different threshold for stress on their body. So, you know, I lost my period post birth control. I got it back for 1.5 years. And then I went into a calorie deficit, very strategic, nothing crazy, to lose the weight that I had gained post birth control because I comfortably sit around like 120 pounds. I am 5 foot. I'm a shorty. So like 5 pounds feels like 15 on me. And I was up to almost 150 post birth control. And so we went into a calorie deficit, lost that weight. I lost my period 6 months into that calorie deficit again. And when I tell you, I was around like 130 pounds when I lost my period. I was by no means underweight, low body fat, anything of that sort. And it just goes to show like my body has a specific threshold for how long can I be dieting? How much weight can I lose without other things downregulating? And it's really frustrating because I'm like, I literally could lose another 15 pounds and still be of like a quote unquote healthy body weight for what feels good for me. But my body is saying, nope, we feel stressed, you know? So I think that's just really important to note as well, is like everyone's threshold is different and you have to listen to the signals that your body is giving you.
And it's extremely frustrating too, right? Oh, when you feel like
the most frustrating.
It is absolutely horrifying. You feel like you're doing literally everything right. You may even feel pretty okay at that time, but then.
Oh, I felt great. I felt great.
But then your body gives you a signal. And for some people, it is that period loss. Like I'll say, once I got my period back, outside of when I had COVID, which I hope the episode doesn't get like trashed because I just said the vid, but when I had COVID, my period was so whack. And I had so many clients where that was the case, but outside
of that. So funny. My assistant coach literally just told me today, she was like, I had COVID and my period didn't come. Yep. So funny.
That happened to me. And I've had it happen to friends. We're all texting each other like, oh my God, I might be pregnant and I have COVID.
You're like, no, it's fine.
Double whammy. But no, my period, knock on wood, is pretty stable. Like I've dieted since getting it back, but my gut, it is not. The second that I get too stressed, constipation. The second, like even if it's just something that's acute. So we all have different signals. Like anxiety is probably a big one for a lot of people, but you can also look at, well, what is your gut health telling you? What is your sleep telling you? If you're normally someone that sleeps decently through the night, besides, you know, getting up to go to the bathroom once, which I think almost everybody does.
Yeah.
And then you start waking up between 1, 2, 3, 4 a.m. and you're just like wired and you're like, wow, I could go run a marathon right now. That is a sign that your nervous system is telling you stress cascades are happening. Yep. Hormones are triggering. Things are firing. Your body at that time doesn't feel safe. And acutely, we all have those nights. We all have a really bad night of sleep here and there and it means nothing.
For sure.
But over time, over years, and that was years and months, the case for, I think, both of us to some degree.
Yeah.
So all those things add up. For me, it was a lot of just thinking I could do everything. You know, I spent years throughout my undergrad, for years after that, I was working in-person personal training, building my business when I first started in 2017, 2018, drinking, oh God, I don't even want to know how much caffeine, probably like upwards of 500 to 800 milligrams in a day.
Holy crap.
I know. And now I drink basically zero. So I'm like, finally. But yeah, it was bad. So, you know, there's a lot of stressors that can go into it. And if you're sitting here like, I don't do any of those things, I manage my stress, I deep breathe, I meditate, what gives? That might be where we need to look under the hood. And we might need to order some of those comprehensive labs and see if there's something internally that's causing stress, like that insulin resistance, like some estrogen dominance. So that way, you know, you can get to that point where, yeah, you're taking care of yourself like a boss, but your body shows.
Absolutely.
Gives you that reward of your period back or your normal digestion or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on all of that. And it's just like, it takes a lot of internal work. It takes a lot of grace and patience with yourself as well.
It does. So I feel like another common question that I get is, well, if I'm going to go off of my birth control, how quickly can I expect my period to come back? And what would you say you've seen?
Yeah, man, it's so difficult because I will honestly tell my clients, like, it can take 6 months to a year plus to get your period back. And like you said, it's also going to depend on when you get that first bleed. Like for me, I was 10 months in when I got that first like normal bleed again. And then it took me another like 6 to 8 months of regulating things at that point, right? So genuinely, and I think that's where people get so frustrated because it's so funny. I had actually a girl in my DMs a few months ago and she was like, this was like July. She was like, hey, I came off of birth control at the end of May. Like, it's now beginning of July. I haven't gotten my period. Like, you know, I think I'm going to go to my doctor and make an appointment. Something's not right. And in my head, I'm thinking, it's only been like a month and a half, girl. Like, you got a long time to go probably, right? And so, but it's just so disheartening. And it's so uncommon for women to even know that. Most women think they're going to come off of birth control and get their period back right away. And it is like, I hate to say it, but you're going to be in for a rude awakening, you know, and it's really disheartening. And so that's the beauty of, obviously, you know, being able to educate yourself on these things and having resources like this one. But yeah, I would say probably 6 months to a year and a half, honestly, is what I commonly see.
I would agree with that. And especially if you're somebody that, you know, you do want to get pregnant and you're starting to think about fertility planning or whatever it is, factor that in. If you are on birth control,
yes,
I would think about your timeline very carefully. I have had clients that I've worked with for years, and it was one of those things where it's like, you know, they came in with body comp goals, relationship with food goals. But then, you know, as we've all gotten older and are approaching those, you know, typical pregnancy years, they're like, all right, you know, I got to come off this birth control. I'm like, okay, these are the things that we got to do first. So I will say, like, how long it takes to get it back depends on a lot of variables. Because I have had clients get it back, and I would say the shortest would be 2 months. I feel like it's very rare for people to get their cycle back the first month they're off of it.
Yep.
I
just had a client get hers back the first month she was off of it. And wow. I was like, wow, this is crazy. But I was like, I'm not holding my breath, because there could be things that happen here in the next few months. But yeah, it was wild.
Well, I mean, if she was working with you before that and doing all the things that you mentioned previously, which are things that we do with our clients all the time, regardless of if they're coming off birth control or not, then that plays a massive role. I mean, even just focusing on the things that Kara mentioned earlier with your diet, with your exercise intensity in your normal life as a female, that's going to help your periods be less aggressive if you do currently have a period. But absolutely, I will say, those clients that have taken off birth control with their doctor's permission, obviously, IUDs tend to come back faster. I don't know. Yep. I think it's just how much it down regulates the actual sex hormones. The feedback loop there is not as aggressive as like a pill, where that usually, depending on the estrogen progesterone ratios of the pill, those usually do further suppress hormones than an IUD will.
Yes. I think one of the statistics that I've seen is like, the hormonal IUDs, like the Mirena and like the Skyla, suppress ovulation and like 85% of cycles in the first year, but then only like 15% of cycles in the years after that. So I would say, unless you're somebody who's doing like a copper IUD, which is obviously non-hormonal, I normally say like the hormonal IUDs are probably the better route, rather than like the pills, the combination pills, because those are going to completely suppress ovulation, hormones, all of that kind of stuff. So, and I was on a combination pill, so.
I was too. I didn't have a period the entire time I was on the pill, and I loved
it.
Like, this is great. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Then, that's crazy.
Obviously I learned that it wasn't so great.
Right. Right.
Having a period is important for a lot of things outside of just getting pregnant someday. Right.
Yeah.
It's bone health. It's mental health. It's gut health. Right. There are so many things where, as inconvenient as it is sometimes, having a period is part of being a woman. It's part of having vitality and longevity and hormonal balance. I mean, estrogen has so many benefits, as does progesterone. But I would say, you know, screw your timeline. Try not to have a timeline in your head when it comes to coming off birth control. If you're someone that thinks that they're going to want to in the next year or two, I would suggest starting to focus on your internal health and detox pathways now, whether that's on your own or with a coach, because especially, you know, with the pill, it can take that 6 months to a year. And that's assuming systems are healthy before that. So as far as, you know, if somebody comes to you and they're like, I'm on birth control, I want to come off of it, but I'm going to do what you say first. How long will you usually spend kind of priming them to come off, so to speak?
Yeah, I think that it's a funny question, because I feel like at the minute that someone comes to me, I feel like I'm already doing so much of the priming, right? Because it's ingrained into so many of the foundational variables that we focus on with our clients. But I will say, at least normally, like, we want at least like 2 to 3 months ahead of time, I would say, like, at least, right? But again, a lot of those clients have already been doing the things up to that point. We might just start adding in some extra liver support, detox pathway support, like within like 2 to 3 months ahead of time.
Yeah, that's typically what I'll do too. If I suspect, like if the client comes to me and they're having certain symptoms, or if they're just able to get a full blood panel done, whether they order it through their doctor, or I actually don't use Life Extension anymore. I used to. I use Evexia and I just make custom panels. So it's like,
oh yeah, I use Evexia as well, but I do not know why I have not got like, so I use Evexia to order my Dutch testing and GI maps, but I have not gotten into making custom panels, and I absolutely need to do that because I'm curious if it would be cheaper.
It is cheaper. That's why I do it. Like the price of the Life Extension one, what is it, like 200 usually unless it's on sale?
Yeah, 275 unless it's on sale for 205.
Oh yeah. With Evexia, you'll have to play with that. You can make like a way more decked out panel for like 250.
That's amazing.
And the results come back so fast, like a week.
And can they take, where can they take it to get the blood drawn? Is it a LabCorp or does it have to be somewhere else?
It's a LabCorp. And okay, for those of you listening, dietitians can order you blood work. Typically, yep, it's not through your insurance unless you have, like, I accept like HSA, FSA, like health savings accounts. But if you, yes, are in New York, we cannot order blood work for you because New York doesn't like you to order.
I will say, this is so funny that you bring this up because I was on our client call last night. We were talking about blood work for New York because I have a handful of clients in New York. If you're near a Mount Sinai hospital in New York, I have two clients who go to that hospital and they order every single thing that I need every single time. I love them. Amazing. I love their doctors. So that's a little tip for anybody in New York.
That's perfect. So I have quite a few girls in New York and luckily they have decent like PCPs that they have a good relationship with. So sometimes I'll just be like, this is the list, get as much as you can.
Yes.
But yeah, you know, getting that assessment before you go off your birth control is going to be helpful. I won't always run sex hormones unless they have PCOS-like symptoms despite the birth control. I'll really just look at thyroid, cortisol, and make sure everything is good there. And then, like you mentioned, you know, I'll upregulate liver support. I don't always throw in a ton in the beginning unless they're having symptoms that warrant it, but I'll also do NAC. I like calcium deglucurate a lot for
love calcium detox, deglucurate.
All that kind of stuff. And again, kind of just depends on your history, where you're at now, any medications that you're on, because you also always want to cross-reference your medications before adding any additional supplementation in and checking with your doctor or dietitian. But when it comes to, I would say, getting your period back naturally, supporting your body is the first step. And that's something that I think as women, we should all really start learning how to do now. You're here, which is great. We're going to help you do that. And Kara, do you have any kind of final notes for any of the ladies listening?
I would just say, if you are somebody who is coming off of birth control, you're in the process, give yourself grace, give your body grace, give yourself patience, because if you are somebody who has to go through the process of like waiting to get your period back or even gaining weight to do so, whatever it may be, it definitely does take a mental toll. And there is I found a lot of healing, and honestly, I found it easiest for my cycle to regulate again whenever I stopped being so mean to myself and whenever I started like doing the internal work and the mindset work, and I truly started accepting my body and having respect for it rather than feeling like it was fighting against me all the time. So I would say that's probably one of my biggest pieces of advice outside of supporting the rest of your physical body. You have to support your mental health too.
I agree. That is a non-negotiable, and it's hard. It is really hard. So that's where, you know, seeking help can be a great thing, whether it's a coach, whether it's a therapist, or even just your support system. I mean, I feel really grateful that most of my friends are people like you and me.
Yeah, absolutely. We get it,
you know, we text each other about, oh my God, my period's late, this symptom, that symptom. And wow, we don't want you to obsess over every little thing. It is great to build that awareness and start to learn, oh, you know, this is a sign that my hormones are fluctuating. This is a sign that my period may be coming back. And I said we were going to wrap up, but I have more to say. So we're just going to make
this. Oh my gosh, no, totally fine.
Whoever's listening. One thing that I would say, you know, to think about as you're working on getting your cycle back, whether it is post-birth control or whether it is hypothalamic amenorrhea, to monitor a couple different symptoms. So in my opinion, getting acne is a little bit of a good sign. if it is a new onset of acne as you're working on your hormones, because that's a sign that something's happening. Something is fluctuating. Mm-hmm. You're also going to want to pay attention. Yep. It too. It's not fun to have acne, but it is helpful. It's a sign.
Yes.
Pay attention to your vaginal discharge.
Yes. Tracking it.
My girls love when they have to tell me about their discharge. They're like, this is TMI. I'm like, nothing is TMI.
Nothing is TMI. Nothing is ever TMI.
Nothing. But typically when we don't have a period and when our sex hormones are really low, there's not a lot going on down there. There's no sex drive. There's no lubrication, really nothing.
Yeah.
And that alone is stressful. The lack of a sex drive on birth control and right after is one of the most stressful things, especially if you're in a relationship. So I definitely hear you with that and resonate with that.
For sure.
But look out for those changes. Might start noticing some fluctuation there, which is a very good sign. And also just giving your body grace, because when you're on birth control, you are the closest to a man that you will ever be, because your uterus is pretty linear. And that's the thing that when I first came off it, I was like, fuck, I miss being on it. Like, I had so much more energy all month long. But I think that's also one of the beauties of just being a female and accepting that we are so much different than men. It is okay that we have more emotions during our luteal phase. It is okay that we're a little bit lower energy. And instead of fighting that, which I definitely did for so many years with the caffeine and with all the stimulants and whatever it is, just kind of embracing it and accepting that, you know, you're going to be better at some things during your flip phase. You're going to be better at some things during your luteal phase. So that's where I like to have my girls keep a journal. I have them do it with me. Like, we have a shared spreadsheet that will, I'll have them write down symptoms, you know, what, how are you feeling? What's your bowel movement like? What was your win of the day? So that way it's not just like, okay, why do I feel like a stage 10 psychopath today? You can look at the trends over the course of the month and be like, oh, this time last month, I also felt like a psychopath. So this must be hormones.
Yes. Looking at those trends is so, so important, because like we were just talking about prior to this, every month, like clockwork, 5 days before I get my period, I feel like the world is ending. I'm having a panic attack and I am so anxiety ridden. And then in 5 days, I'm like, oh, this is why. And I'm good now, you know? So I think that everything's fine. I think that that's so important. Like you said, like the acne, the cervical mucus, also basal body temperature, which can be a little bit finicky. I have struggled with this myself as well. But because it's not always going to spike the way that we think it should in some women, but you know, an easy way to, you know, track that ovulation is seeing that basal body temperature spike post ovulation. That'll normally go up like 0.5 degrees. But again, like, it, that's really dependent person to person, I feel like, too. And so many things can impact basal body temperature too. Like, how was your sleep? If you had alcohol, anything of that sort, travel, all that kind of stuff. So just keeping those things in mind for sure.
There, yeah. I honestly don't have my clients track their body temperature a ton anymore unless they have an Oura ring, which can kind of do it for you.
Yep. It's hard. It can be really easy to forget. Listen, like I have a temp drop band that I have since fallen out of using that I need to get back into, but like I would also just do like a regular, like under the tongue thermometer, but like sometimes I just forget to do it, man. So
and there are a lot of ways too. I think it depends, you know, how far along in your hormone recovery journey that you are, because at a certain point, it's not really worth it to do, in my opinion, and add the extra stress. But, you know, once we do start seeing those trends of hormones coming back online, it can be helpful, especially because we will want to start thinking about pregnancy prevention. So I've done other episodes on this, so I don't want to dive too much into natural fertility, but everybody here, when you have your period, you should be tracking it. I personally just use my Fitbit app. I tell it when I bleed and it tells me a rough estimate of when I'm ovulating, which is, you know, that fertile window, which really is only like 5 to 7 days that you can actually get pregnant. So as long as, you know, you're monitoring that and you're confirming it with changes in your body, your cervical mucus, bowel movements may change. A lot of women have looser stool around ovulation. Some women apparently feel frisky around ovulation, but Kara and I were just talking about how we feel the opposite.
We do not. I feel like a giant potato.
Yep. Literally. Literally a giant fired potato.
Yes, exactly.
And that's part of being a woman. Sometimes you just feel like a potato.
Yes. And that's the beauty of it. And I think just like you said, embracing that, embracing being a woman and all of the fluctuations that come with it, I think is so awesome, because you have to have that. You have to have that respect for yourself and that acceptance of where you're at every stage of your cycle and your journey.
100%. And it's never going to be linear.
Nope. Nope. Always going to be fluctuations for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Kara, this was honestly really fun. I loved our podcast yesterday on yours and our one today. I feel like we just have a great flow. So hopefully everybody listening enjoys it. And Kara, you know, where can everybody find you?
Yeah. So I am primarily on Instagram and TikTok at @KaraGoss_RD. I do have a free Facebook group that we do live trainings in every week. We have a great community there. It's called Functional Fat Loss Secrets for Women. I also have my own podcast called the Not Your Quick Fix podcast on Apple and Spotify. And I also have a website, KaraGossRD.com. So those are kind of all the places I think that you can find me.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us today, Kara. And if you're listening, if this episode was helpful for you, we'd love to connect with you. Follow us, shoot us a message on Instagram, share this episode with somebody else that might need to hear it, subscribe and give us a 5-star rating, and we will talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.